What's up? Welcome to the Fan Pregame. It's SportsCenter, SportsCenter 590, The Fan. Jesse, you got your mic on? Are we ready to rumble?
We're ready to go here.
All right. Wednesday night, another day with Jesse. About another week and a half. Hope you love it. You're stuck with him.
I love it.
Good. I'm
you
glad.
Love it?
I do love it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like old
days. We're having a blast.
We are. Midweek here, we've got another day, another Chris joining us. We're trying to go 5 for 5 this week. Chris Black will join us.
There's enough Chris's in the world that we should be okay.
Well, we need to start thinking ahead because we only got 2 more days. Can we get a Chris every day? We should power rank the best Chris's. Not like
LaRue
was guess.
Electric yesterday.
Not like guess, but like Chris's in general.
Was he as electric on the Jeff Blair show?
I don't know. I just missed it, but I saw
Barker.
That he's still here.
Sans Barker.
Still works for us.
Yeah.
So we're proud of that.
He was excellent.
So we'll have Chris
Big
Black.
Big shoes for Chris Black to fill today.
I hope. I don't think that he's going to, you know, come
spit
with the
as
same
much
energy.
Hot fire.
Like in any way. Like they're very different people.
Sure.
So Chris Black will join us. Jay's looking to win the series versus the Reds tonight. That's a 7 p.m. start, of course, on SportsCenter, SportsCenter 590 Fan. Then we're going to get into some NFL chat with Amy Trask of CBS Sports. It's really coming around the corner.
Like 2 weeks.
We're getting right into it. And I need to get into it too because, you know, just been immersed in Olympics,
and
soccer and life. And now it is NFL season. So let's get this thing going.
I feel like Olympics kind of threw a wrench in the football plans.
Yeah.
Like there's usually just a kind of a lull in baseball season and you find yourself as your team, whatever team you follow in baseball kind of falls out of it. You're like, okay, let me just shift gears a little bit to football. And then we had the Olympics, and now it's like you kind of want a little bit of a break post-Olympics, but there ain't no break. Because if you have fantasy football drafts coming up, and if you haven't done it already, I'm sure it's coming up in the next week.
My placement is Friday, so I hope my horse runs well at the King's Plate.
Man, life comes at you fast, but it's a good time to be in sports media because at least we have a lot to talk about.
We do, and the Leafs have kept us on our toes with announcements of new captains, so it is now time in the second half of our show to really get into it with Amy Trask. So we've got the Jays lineup tonight, and we're seeing something that's now becoming, you know, once is a thing.
Second is like a pattern.
3 times is a trend.
Yeah,
I don't know. Someone's going to correct me on
that. You might have nailed it.
But
I think you nailed
We've now seen Vladdy start at third base more than we have ever, other than his rookie year in 2019, 96 games at third base. But this season, this will be his 7th start at third base. Last year, he had 0. The year before that, he had 1. And the year before that, he had 1. Obviously, he's mingled in it over that stretch of time. But Vlad has talked about third base being his favorite position. He's obviously signed as a third baseman.
Yeah.
This is, you can take this as in a couple directions. Like, is this the Blue Jays now saying, all right, Vlad, you're going to be our third baseman. Let's see you there. Let's see you try it out. And maybe we'll pay you like a third baseman, or maybe this will allow him to be paid more than a first baseman. So Vlad getting another start at third base. Do you like it? Do you want to see more Vlad for the rest of the season there?
Well, I like it if he performs well. I think it
important.
It gives them a lot more flexibility. It's much harder, I think, to find great offensive performers at the third base position. Mm-hmm. Third basemen are usually more expensive than going out and getting a first baseman who can bop just a little bit. So I think it gives them a lot more roster flexibility if Vlad can be a serviceable, or I think you're probably looking for even more than a serviceable third baseman. But the other question and the other hand of this is, where I'm a little bit surprised that they're giving him this opportunity, is that if he can prove that he's going to be a pretty decent third baseman, he's going to be more expensive than he otherwise would be if he was strictly a first baseman or a DH.
I think Vlad is going to get paid the
regardless.
Amount that Vlad is going to get paid. I don't think that the next, so there's like 40 games, let's say, give or take, of this season. And if Vlad is signing in the offseason, I don't know if these next 40 games of Vlad at third base is going to be like, well, that's the difference between 400,000 and 400 million and 500 million. But I do think that if they're going to play him at third base because that's where they're going to play him, what else is the season for?
Yeah.
You know, like at this point, if Vlad's going to be your third baseman, then maybe it's worth giving him some real practice.
Yeah.
They've got that much time to really figure it out.
Yeah. He's actually looked decent there too. I know he has a couple of errors and this will be his 8th. A game at third base tonight, but he looks nimble there. He looks like his arm. He loves showing off his arm, takes a little bit, an extra beat and fires it over to first. He looks good. So I'm excited to see with a few more reps if it can continue.
Okay. Third base. And now it'll be our third Chris of the week. So let's bring in Chris Black, producer here at Sportsnet. How are you? Welcome. Carrying on the tradition as Chris's.
There's a lot of Chris's. We might be running out of Chris's.
No, we need to brainstorm.
at sports.
We're gonna have to think of another name. I feel like there's a lot of Bens.
I'm gonna check the email directory.
Next week could be some Bens, maybe. But thanks for having me on. Here's before we move on. Mm-hmm. The last time we spoke, Ailish.
Yes.
There was some rumors of golf happening in Muskoka.
Yes.
Did it come to pass?
We did golf, but not at the course that we so nicely tried to name drop to give us free golf. But we did get a golf round in, and it was just as wonderful. It was more of a Highlands experience, if you know.
It's great until your tee shot hits the rocks and goes off into the forest.
Mine don't do that.
Yeah, you'll right obviously. Yeah,
mine definitely.
Okay. But we did get some golf, so thank you for following up. And I think it was a good round, honestly. It was, but had a bit of other things going on in the system to really recall. talking Vlad, third base, and obviously it's good. We're going to talk a lot of Vlad with you, but let's start with that because this is now going to be another start for him at third. And obviously there's the financial implications where you think, okay, well, he's going to get paid so much more at third, but what should the Blue Jays be prioritizing for the next 40-ish games with Vlad? Because he could play third, he could play first, he could just DH. What do you think is best for Vlad?
To be honest, it's whatever keeps him like engaged, right? Like at this point, this is one of the few times, you know, the first time in a few years where they're not really playing for postseason stuff. So whatever keeps your best player engaged and kind of into this final few weeks of the season, then if that means playing him at a few different positions, playing him at third a couple times a week, then by all means do it. You know, for me, I think what I'm most interested in when it comes to defensively with Vladdy and with, I think with the whole roster is, I think this is where, you know, I think the flexibility gets kind of like, you know, we roll our eyes a little bit at it, but I think that's where it comes in really handy, right? When you're entering an off season where you know you need to add a couple bats and knowing that, hey, if it's Pete Alonso that shows interest and there's mutual interest in it, if that ends up being a guy, then you've got flexibility to move Vlad somewhere else. If it's Alex Bregman that there's interest both sides, then, you know, Vladdy can play first. If it's a second baseman, if it's Haesung Kim, right? Like Horwitz can move over or Horwitz can play second. You've got guys who can play infield and outfield. So I do think, like over the course of a given season, maybe the flexibility can be, you know, overplayed to a certain extent. But I think having the flexibility as you're making roster decisions in the winter can be super helpful. So I think like that's where knowing what you've got from these guys can be really important over the next few weeks.
Well, you mentioned it's important to keep Vlad engaged, and he has been engaged post All-Star break. A guy left for the Olympics like right after the All-Star break, and he was very good. He was a very good hitter. And I came back, and he's basically Babe Ruth. So what have you seen that's changed in Vladimir Guerrero post All-Star break?
I did a few things on this on the site formerly known as Twitter recently with Vladdy. And there's a couple things that are like different or like contrary to popular belief. Mm-hmm. There's a few things. First is, you know, the commonly held belief with him was stay on the heater, get timed up to the heater. That's how you'll find your way. That's how you'll find your power stroke again. That is not what's happened. He's demolishing breaking balls. He's really hitting changeups well. So it's not about staying on the heater, or at least it hasn't been about staying on the heater. The other thing you heard about him last year was pull more foul balls, right? Or sorry, pull more fly balls, pull more balls in the air. That'll bring the power back. That's not what has happened this year, right? Like what we've seen from him is like a bunch of towering blast like center field and right field, right? And they're beautiful. They're the best things to watch in baseball, but they're hard to do. Only a handful of people can do them. It's Aaron Judge, it's Soto, it's Vladdy and a couple others, right? So that's the other thing that's kind of flied in the face of like conventional wisdom. And the other thing is like, I think some people, and these are the things that this is like a confirmation bias thing. We all notice when a good hitter that we all pay attention to swings and misses and strikes out, right? Or especially if he chases out of the zone, because we're expecting and hoping for big things. You know, there's a belief out there that he's chasing less. That's the numbers don't show that. Mm. The numbers show he's chasing way more in June, July, and August than he did in April and May. And the numbers show it's not about, plate discipline. It's not about pulling the ball more. He's really not hitting that many fewer ground balls, which was always a thing. He's just getting back to what I've said in the past is like the Vladdy that he's always meant to be, which is hitting any pitch to any part of the field because he's got God-given talent, and he's like literally one of the five most talented hitters in baseball, and he always has been. He got away from it for a bit, but I think he put in a lot of work this offseason. A number of people have mentioned it, like the body. He looks really, really good.
Yeah, he does.
I mean, you see him, he looks strong out there. Like, and he's put in the work and he's benefited from it. And like, I do think like part, there's a connection, right? Between that power to center field and right field and the work he's put in the offseason. Like, I don't think you can hit those balls if you're not in your best possible shape. Like, in order to have all field power, you need to be in really good shape. And so, you know, he's earned all of this. And I really do think like this is, you know, this is the Vladdy we expected, but this is also like, this is him playing up to his ability, which is like a crazy high standard. And when I'm on with Blake, we always joke about this on JStock Plus, like we hold him to a higher standard. It's why we talk about him more than pretty much any other player.
Yeah.
He's interesting, but he is more gifted than literally all but a handful of Blue Jays hitters in franchise history.
I encourage everybody to go to your Twitter or X page at Down to Black because you've done a really great thorough breakdown, of course, of some of Vlad's changes post All-Star break. And one of them, I thought maybe you could try to break it down to us, not visually, were some just subtle adjustments in his swing. And it's better when you go look at it, and I'll encourage people to see the videos. But it was just like 2 to 3 or 3 to 4 subtle things that you noticed while watching the videos of Vlad that you caught on, that has obviously helped. Whether they're massive, significant changes or not, it's made a big difference in his production.
Yeah, like Joe Siddle's hit on this a lot. It's kind of like the barrel turn or barrel tip. But it's a lot about like what we'd call like a negative move or like his first move back before he moves forward towards the pitcher. But one thing, he started that negative move or that move back just a touch later. And again, maybe that helps him stay behind the baseball. Maybe that helps him hit the ball to center field and right field more. Who knows? But the other thing that I noticed, and maybe this is something that's just has happened naturally, but his hands were kind of wrapped kind of behind his helmet and behind his head like for longer in the past. And then at some point in the last month or two, they've gotten them out and away from his body. I think this is what Siddle's talking about the barrel tip or the barrel turn. But I just think he's got, to use the God-given talent again, like he's got an ability, like hand-eye coordination, to get the barrel of the bat to the baseball that's just really, really otherworldly. And maybe that move has just freed up those hands, right? Just freed up his hands to do what they are very, very blessed to be able to do. So, you know, I'm definitely no expert when it comes to this stuff, but it's just stuff that I can notice. I don't necessarily know what the reasons are behind that. Joe Siddle and Caleb and guys like that are the experts in terms of that stuff, but it's just something that I noticed that's different just compared to not only to previous years, but just different compared to like April and May.
We were talking in the first answer about Vladdy's versatility positionally and the flexibility that gives the Blue Jays when it comes to free agency in the offseason. You mentioned a few of those names, but you also retweeted a really good article online about free agents to be. And I was going through it, and there were some names that popped up that were pretty interesting to me. I know Soto is probably not going to happen because everyone's with big, big, big money is going to be after him. But when you go through the list of guys who are available, the Blue Jays say they want to be contenders for a World Series in 2025. And the only way really that's going to happen is you're going to have to pay somebody something to bring more talent into the mix here. The roster construction needs to take another step. So when you look at those names and you evaluate who you think the Blue Jays would be smart to go after, who pops into mind for you?
Santander is the first guy for me, like switch hitting power, cleanup hitter, something they've been chasing for a couple years now. Like I think that's the most obvious one. Now, again, like you have to preface all the free agent talk with like, it takes two, right? Like you can offer somebody all the money in the world, like Chris Bassett said, like you need the other guy to be interested, or even Matt Chapman. Like, you know, we don't know the Jays' level of interest in Chapman. And even if he opted out this year, again, there's a natural fit in terms of position, but some guys want to be on the West Coast. Like some guys want to do spring training like in Arizona.
Yeah.
Right. Like, exactly. Like, so it requires it's a two-way street. But again, like that's where, to take it back to what we were talking about earlier, that's where the flexibility of saying, we don't need to just sign a left fielder. It can be a left fielder, or it can be a third baseman, or it can be a first baseman, or it could even be a middle infielder, right? Like there are a couple middle infielders I think are really interesting on the free agent market or potential free agent market. There's Willy Adames from Milwaukee, and there's Kim from San Diego, who I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. Like that would be more, especially the Kim, like that isn't filling the offensive needs of this team necessarily, even though he's become a pretty good hitter. So, you know, like what would be the reaction among the fan base and the Twitterati if they signed another elite defender? I don't know. But like they've got holes to fill, but they can mix and match, right? They can find ways to fit guys in when there's mutual interest.
We're chatting with Chris Black, producer here at SportsCenter, and you can follow him at Down to Black. Okay, Will Wagner. So I'm trying not to get Babe Schneider mania, but I'm struggling because, I mean, yesterday cleanup spot appearance is like his first week of the major leagues. He's almost batting 500. Like, okay, calm me down or hype me up here, because I fell in love with the Babe Schneider mania and it's not really working this season. So what have you seen that's sustainable maybe from Will Wagner that I can really like start to hone in on?
The all-field approach, right? Like the plate discipline, all that stuff that a lot of the guys that have come up from Buffalo seem to have. They seem to have an understanding of the strike zone. I do think the automatic balls and strike system that they have in AAA baseball like has a lot to do with that. I think the coaching staff in Buffalo, and that was in place when Matt Hagg was there, has a lot to do with that as well. Like, but I think, you know, Ilish, I think you're right to mention Davis Schneider, and it's a good like reminder of that. Baseball's a really tough sport to play. I think all the pro sports are tough to play. I wouldn't know, but like it just feels incredibly difficult. It does feel, I've mentioned this before as well, like feels like scouting is better than ever, and other teams will figure out your holes quicker than ever. And that's because of all the video that's available. That's because of all the data that's available. Like if you can't hit a certain pitch, or if you can't hit any type of pitch in a certain part of the zone, teams will find out faster than ever. That's why I don't give up. Like that's why, you know, when the inevitable struggles for Will Wagner come, like that's why I'm not going to give up on him. That's why I wouldn't give up on Davis Schneider. Like, you know, I don't know if we're planning on talking about him, but like he's, you know, he reached a certain point last year that only a handful of Jays mm-hmm. have gone to. Not only like it was his first 25 games with the Jays, but like those 25 games, not only for anyone's first 25 games, but like any 25 game span with the Jays over the last 10 years, like there's only a handful of guys who have ever gotten there to what Davis Schneider was producing last year. And we're talking like Vladdy this year, mm-hmm. Josh Donaldson and Edwin. Like that's it. That's the list for how productive he was last year. So a bad month or two of part-time play for Davis Schneider, like don't give up on him, because like the part that I most relate to in terms of a pro athlete struggling is like when you feel like you're swimming, like when you feel like you're swimming upstream or sinking in quicksand mm-hmm. in any part of your life or in any part of your job, it is really tough to like get yourself out of it in the moment without mm-hmm. taking a step away and without. So like it must be incredibly difficult, but like, again, that's why I have faith with all these young guys. And like, this is a rite of passage mm-hmm. for every young Jay. So like, keep the faith, like, yes, be optimistic about Wagner, but also keep the faith on Schneider.
What do you want to see from Davis that would lead you to believe that he can eventually work his way out of it? Because I know the criticism has been, you know, the high fastball, the sort of uppercut swing that lends itself to a lot of strikeouts at times. What do you think he needs to do? Because you're very good at analyzing that sort of thing. What does he need to do in order to get back to where he was, or some semblance of that?
I don't know, to be honest. I think there was like he's caught in the middle. Like I think he was trying to fix some things on the fly, which again, as I just said, it is incredibly difficult. But I think it's just whatever your plan is at the start of an at-bat, sticking to it.
Right.
Like one of the things we most loved, and there is a way to measure this, right? Like there's a way, one of the things that Savant does is like measure how many of your swings are quote unquote competitive swings. And I think, you know, I haven't looked at the numbers specifically with Schneider, but my guess would be that there's probably more uncompetitive swings. He's probably caught in the middle. There's a little bit of, you know, am I going after this pitch or it's not the pitch? that I was necessarily looking for. So like one of the things we loved about him last year is like when he saw a pitch that he wanted to go after, it was like all systems go, I'm giving you 110% of my best swing, right? And so I think just probably seeing a little more of that, like we all knew even in the moment last year that there was going to be swing and miss in that profile. And I think everyone knows that. And I think everyone's okay with that, but like, don't dial it back. Mm-hmm. Right. So like, I think there's a way to still maybe use more of the field, but still swing, you know, give your A swing as much as possible. So I think that's probably it. Be less in the middle and be more like full steam ahead.
I got one last one for you when you have a minute or two here. Bowden Francis, AL Player of the Week. I just wonder, like, obviously the pitching staff has been a point of pride at times for this Blue Jays rotation. And what is your confidence level that he would be a part of the rotation next season? And is he making an argument that he's already staked his claim there?
He's definitely making an argument. Mm-hmm. What is most encouraging to me is the splitter. Like he used it a ton last start. It's a really good pitch. I think it's a nice adjustment that he's made. Like we just talked about how it's hard to make adjustments in season. He, you know, the curveball was arguably his best pitch last year. It's been hit like crazy this year. And he developed this splitter, right? Like and he's been using it more. Like all the career highs in that last start that he set on the splitter were like crazy. Like he hadn't thrown like 20 or more in any start in his career. He threw 32 last start, right? Like, wow. And the numbers were great. And it's like, I don't know. I don't pretend to know. I haven't talked to them. Like, but like, it must be nice. It must be a good place to learn how to throw a splitter when you've got Kevin Gausman in the room with you, when you're in a rotation with Gausman. Bassett throws one, Eric Swanson throws one. Like there's a lot of guys in there. So like, I think it's the development of that pitch as an added weapon, and it looks the part, right? Like it passes the eye test. It's not just about, you know, it wasn't about the particular team he was facing. It's when you look at that pitch and the action, you have to like what's happening, right? And we're going to show some stuff. Like I'm producing this weekend and he's going to pitch. I think the rotation's moved around a little bit, but he'll pitch at some point this weekend. But like, we're going to show some stuff about like the splitter is like the use is exploding league wide right now. And I think it's like an easier pitch to throw than a changeup for a few different reasons, but like, maybe 10 years ago, less than 50 pitchers in all of Major League Baseball threw a splitter, and now it's like doubled. Like it's been going up year after year after year. I think the Blue Jays are at the forefront of it, obviously, with Gausman and the handful of other guys who've done it. So it's interesting to see Francis lean into that pitch. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see if it's something that he kind of sticks with. Is it matchup specific? But I think it plays. You heard Buck in his last start say, it isn't just about against lefties. Like, it's a good pitch, mm-hmm. regardless, lefties, righties, whoever. So if he can keep developing that as a weapon, I think he can definitely be in the rotation next year.
Perfect. Looks like he's scheduled for Saturday against the Angels, so that'll be good. We'll be looking forward to all the work you do. Thanks for joining us.
That was fun.
Chris, number three of the week. Nailed it.
Chris, number three.
Yeah, maybe we'll just stop there. We'll retire the Chris's for the week. We can't beat you. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
Anytime there's another Chris week, I'll be back.
Okay, awesome. That's Chris Black, Sportsnet live events producer. You can check out his work at Down to Black on Twitter. Lots of great stuff. And if Bowden Francis doesn't work, Luke Maley can just step in and do two scoreless innings.
Yeah, what's up? Legend. What's up with that? I guess they dialed back the rules for the position players, so you can only do it if your team, if you're losing and you're down 8 runs, or if you're leading and you can do it by leading by 10 runs in the ninth. So it's a little more complicated. But yeah, I don't know. I think
at
it's
that point,
fine.
Like I don't know how I would feel if I was called upon to pitch in a 10-2 like deficit. But I guess you gotta have fun with it.
I feel like it's a little more embarrassing for the batter. Like
then when you strike out against Luke Maley.
Yeah, was it David Schneider grounding out on a 41-mile-an-hour
pitch? I mean, if someone's throwing a 41-mile-per-hour ball at you and you're used to the hundreds.
That's not embarrassing for Luke Maley.
Yeah, you're in a tough spot.
It's embarrassing for David Schneider, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's too bad. Okay, we'll take a quick break. Amy Trask of CBS, former Raiders CEO as well, will help us tee up some major storylines here in the NFL, go from rookies to some of the veterans. We'll do some best bets. We'll wrap up on the other side of the break. And you can always text us at 590-590 if you got any thoughts. Fan pregame, we'll be right back. See you then.
covering the Blue Jays from an analytical perspective. Jays Talk Plus with Blake Murphy. Be sure to subscribe and download Jays Talk on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, welcome back on Fan Pregame, Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. A little later on, the Reds and Blue Jays. Blue Jays looking to win that series. 7 o'clock start on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and across Sportsnet, of course, Ariel Rodriguez on the mound. We're going to get to a little best bets in a bit, but Blue Jays had an offensive explosion last night.
Refreshing.
Back-to-back home runs.
Very refreshing.
I couldn't believe my eyes. So let's see if they can continue that tonight. But we're going to pivot to some NFL talk. We were saying we're a little rusty. We're starting to get into the, all right, what's going on in the NFL world? So who better to help us out than Amy Trask, CBS and former Raiders CEO. Amy, thanks so much for jumping on. How are you?
Well, thank you very much for having me. And I was smiling as you said you're a bit rusty because I don't know how the heck it already got to be middle of August.
I totally agree. Like it's now feels like fall here in Toronto, at least starting to get chilly. I know you're a West Coast girl, I believe still there. So you don't have the same, you know, difficulties that we're dealing with frost warnings. But it feels like it's beginning to be football season. But I mean, that's a very happy thing around here, too.
Well, football season is a very happy thing, but yes, I'm a California girl, and if it's 70 degrees, I consider that. Well, I think 75 degrees is fall, and below 70 is winter.
Okay. Well, we would be very happy with that. So
we can go in a million directions here with you because, as you mentioned, or as Ailish mentioned, we're getting right back into the swing of football here, but I think the best place to start is the young quarterbacks. And let's start with Caleb Williams specifically, because he is in flashes and in spurts in the preseason looked very worthy of all of the hype that is generated around that name. When you look at his a troubled franchise at times, especially over the last little while, can Caleb Williams be the guy that drags the Chicago Bears out of the doldrums that they've experienced for the last number of years?
Well, I'll answer that in two ways. Can he be? Yes, I believe he can. Will he be? Depends on so much more than just the quarterback. Look, we all know this. Football is math. Do you score more points than your opponent? So, yes, I think Caleb can be very exciting, and I think Bears fans should be very excited. But the team has a lot more to do than simply put Caleb out there. You've got to have a surrounding cast. Most games are won or lost at the line of scrimmage. You've got to protect him. And you know what? The fewer points you hold your opponent to, the easier you make his job.
I was looking at the options that Caleb Williams has, and we're going to cross-compare like some of the other rookie quarterbacks, but I feel like he's been put in a really great position with all the weapons that he has at receiver, some of the young guys, some experienced guys, and like how they're going to prioritize using all of these weapons for him to work with right away. Like, I guess that would be a really nice atmosphere to be acclimating yourself to at the NFL level, having a lot of people to throw the ball to. So I would say Caleb Williams feels like he would be in a great position to start his rookie season.
Well, you know, everything you said is, of course, accurate. And, you know, one thing people often fail to focus on is when you have a very, very, very high pick in the draft, unless that is because you have traded as an organization to move up in the draft, it's because you have, and I'll use the word earned loosely, but you've earned that high pick by failing to perform the season before. So often we see these young quarterbacks who have tremendous potential drafted very, very, very high, and there is no supporting cast. I mean, there's a reason why the team drafting that high, again, unless there was a trade, there's a reason they're drafting as high as they are. So the more weapons you have for a player, the better. And I think you made some terrific points about him.
Well, Tom Brady had some interesting comments on the Stephen A. Show. I'm going to quote him here. I think it's just a tragedy that we're forcing these rookies to play early. But the reality is the only reason why we are is because we've dumbed the game down, which has allowed them to play. Of course, Caleb Williams isn't the only rookie quarterback that's expected to start under center in week one. There's Jaden Daniels has been named as the Commanders starter. Bo Nix, I believe it was earlier today, is going to start for the Denver Broncos. Are you aligned with Brady when he says it's probably not the best thing for the long-term development of these rookies to be playing right away, but the NFL has kind of catered the game to the point where they actually can? And if you look around the league, like some of these rookies might be stepping in here and talent-wise, at least, could be in the upper echelon among quarterbacks in talented in the NFL. So is it a good thing for the league that these guys are coming in right away and starting as opposed to sitting for 2-3 years to learn the ropes?
Well, I have a similar view to Tom in some regards, but I think the cause is different than what he pointed out. In other words, all right, kids, any kids listening today, you got to Google Venn diagrams, because that's how we learned math in my day and age. Venn diagrams. I love Venn diagrams, two overlapping circles. So I agree with Tom that players are starting, and quarterbacks in particular, are being put into action much sooner than used to be the case. But I disagree with him as to the reason why that's the case. That changed with the adoption of the CBA that is currently in place when it was adopted, and now it's on the umpteenth iteration. But when the CBA that is currently in place was put in place and the years to free agency were reduced and different mechanisms for managing your roster were instituted, the urgency was on teams to play players faster. You used to be able under old CBAs to sit a player for a number of years on the bench. Aaron Rodgers sat behind Brett Favre. That's just one example. So I do agree with Tom that quarterbacks are being put on the field far faster than used to be the case. But I think the reason dates back to the implementation of the new CBA. And I'm not suggesting that's, you know, that it was the wrong thing to give players greater rights and greater freedoms after fewer years. But the result is you got to play them sooner. Mm.
Jaden Daniels, the second overall pick, obviously another spotlight there. But I wonder what the difference is between being, you know, number one, you're Caleb Williams, you've got all this pressure, and your team is being, like, already put in the, well, could maybe something could happen. And then Jaden Daniels and the Commanders, like, maybe an organization that has had some ups and downs as well. Is there such thing as being under the radar as a second overall pick? And maybe that's a good thing for Jaden Daniels and people that are hoping for a little success with the Commanders?
By the way, that was very, very diplomatically stated when you said some ups and
yes,
downs.
Yes, they have had some ups and maybe some more downs, but...
That was the height of diplomacy. Well done. Yeah, there is a value in not having that spotlight shining on you. But the spotlight can shine on a player for any number of reasons. Where he was drafted, certainly the spotlight in that regard is going to be on Caleb, perhaps more than other quarterbacks, but it also depends on the market in which you're playing. As we know, the spotlight shines more brightly on some markets than it does on others. But you know what? If I were starting out as a quarterback new to the league, I would hope that spotlight would be a little less bright, at least in my first few weeks.
Well, the spotlight is going to continue to shine on Josh Allen because he's one of the true stars in the National Football League, and there's a lot of people in these parts, including the person to my right, who are a bit partial to the Buffalo Bills. Obviously, it's a bit of a different story with the Bills this year. No Stephon Diggs anymore, but it's still a fascinating division. Rodgers back with the Jets. Hopefully, he can stay healthy. The Dolphins coming off a pretty big year. Do you think the Bills still deserve to be favorites in the AFC East in what continues to be a fascinating division?
Well, it is a fascinating division, but before I answer that, let me just say to the Buffalo Bills fan, if I hear the words 51-3 come out of your mouth, I'm going to do the, oh, wait, I lost this connection. I can't hear you anymore because I was there for 51-3. So your team really, really did it to us that day. I think the AFC East is a fascinating division. I think Buffalo has every opportunity to excel again. My eyes are also on Miami. Now, that doesn't mean we might not see something exciting from the Jets or something exciting from the Patriots. We could be surprised, or I could be somewhat surprised in that regard. I don't think it's a slam dunk, no pun intended with the cross-sport reference. I don't think it's a slam dunk for the Bills. I think they have every opportunity to excel and take the division, but I really, really do have an eye on Miami as well.
Yeah, I don't take any of that personally. As a Bills fan, I'm feeling a little bit less confident. I think this year, it's just Josh Allen is the guy, and I feel confident in him. But you know, there's still a lot of question marks, and they've always been getting injured in the first couple of weeks of training camp. It just makes me cautious. So I will recircle that in a few weeks. But one team that I'm actually, and maybe it's because I've been a Bills fan and I'm allowing myself like a secondary team to like, and it's been the Lions. I just love the way that they play. I love their coaching staff. I love the energy.
Different conference.
Yeah, and I can like them, you know, without hurting myself with the Bills love. But I'm finding there's always a lot of confidence around the Lions, and this year feels like it might be the biggest one, as big as a threat as maybe anyone in the NFC. It's like a really complete lineup. Like, what would you say are some holes from the Lions if you were to nail some down? Because I'm feeling pretty confident on them.
Well, Jared Goff. Mm. A California Golden Bear, yep. And that's where I went to college. So I'm all in on hoping Jared Goff does well. Yeah. I didn't like the manner in which the Rams let him go. And to the Rams' credit, they have apologized and said they didn't handle that well. And look, let anyone among us who hasn't handled a situation well raise our hand, because we all mess up at times, and the Rams said they could have handled it a lot better. That said, I really do wish the best for Jared Goff. I think the biggest challenge for Detroit is that they're no longer sort of off the radar screen. Mm. You know, when you're a team that nobody's focusing on and you haven't performed very well, your opponents may not be as focused as they should be. Well, you know what? That's done. Detroit performed so well last year. They almost beat San Francisco, you know, arguably should have beaten San Francisco in that final game. But now, you know, that game, opponents are going to be looking at Detroit differently this year than they may have in the past. So I think that's going to be a big challenge for Detroit.
Are the Falcons maybe in that spot of what you're talking about as a team that maybe it doesn't have that attention yet? Because right now, you know, they made some major defensive upgrades over the last couple weeks, and there's a lot of hype around them, but not the same amount of hype that I've seen with the Lions for the last few years. Like, it's like the Falcons are now entering into the spotlight. Are you buying some of the favorite, the way that they're being talked about in the media is maybe a team that we should keep our eyes on as well?
Well, those two defensive moves they made that you just referenced are a reason to keep an eye on them. I wasn't wowed by what they had done, but I saw those two moves. And look, I worked for almost 30 years for Al Davis, who told me with respect to defense two things over and over and over in my career. One, the quarterback must go down, and he must go down hard. And two, he'd say, kid, don't ever leave a team without corners. So, you know, I do think those defensive additions by Atlanta put them in a different category, and I am very eager to see what they do. You know what? That's another division that is absolutely wide open. I could see any one of those. Well, I guess maybe two. I think Atlanta may be a little bit more likely now given those additions. You know, Carolina has a lot to work out. Tampa's got some changes, although I'm a big, big, big Baker Mayfield believer. So, you know, maybe it comes down to Tampa and Atlanta. We'll see.
We can't let you go without asking you about the Kansas City Chiefs. I find it kind of interesting that they're back-to-back Super Bowl champions, and yet it almost feels like they're flying under the radar in the sense that there just isn't that much to talk about with the Chiefs. You know what you're going to get. You know Patrick Mahomes is great. Yeah, there might, you know, be some more wear on the tires of Travis Kelce, but they did a pretty good job in the offseason of upgrading a receiving core that struggled at times last year. Is there any reason to believe that the Kansas City Chiefs, I don't want to say will get back to the Super Bowl again, but won't remain competitive and remain as a team that has a target on their back throughout the regular season?
Well, they will have a target on their back, as you just noted. I do believe they will absolutely remain competitive. Whether or not they make it all the way depends on so much. As we know, every single team is one horrible injury away from an entirely different season than without it. They did lose L'Jarius Sneed, which I think is a big loss, although, and they're working out to figure out who's going to seize that spot. But boy, oh boy, did they upgrade at receiver with Xavier Worthy. Mm-hmm. Cliff Branch said to me all the time, speed kills. And that's going to be an exciting matchup to watch, Mahomes to Worthy.
Well, Amy, this was an absolute blast. I feel like I'm feeling a little bit more ready for NFL season now, whether the temperature changes or not. So we appreciate you coming on. It was great to chat.
Well, thank you. Thank you very, very much for having me. And thank you for not saying 51-3.
Oh, no. But when you sign off, I might, though. So don't listen.
Okay. Fair enough.
Thanks, Amy. Appreciate your time. That's Amy Trask of CBS and former Raiders CEO.
Do you agree with me with the Chiefs? It's like,
well, yeah.
Like you just kind of assume that they're going to be good. So you don't really talk about them that much. The receiver changes are significant, but it feels like once they struggle, like if they come out of the gate, I don't know, 3-3, then people are like,
I think we would talk about it if they were 3-3.
Yeah, but heading into the season, you're kind of waiting until they slip up to start talking about them.
There's as long as you've got a healthy Patrick Mahomes, it's
what a luxury.
It is kind of the way that you just interpret this season. Like, it's like, who is going to take down this dynasty? It's a three-peat right now. They're on their way for a three-peat. It's like, who's their biggest threat in the AFC? Like, those are kind of the way that you view it. But I think it's funny with the Kelce magic. Like, it's just something about this last year, and I was thinking about it off the air. Like, who has had a better 24 months than Travis Kelce?
Well, is he still focused on football?
Yeah, I think he is.
That's the question. Is he still focused on football? And there was a decline last year that we saw at times. And it has nothing to do with off the field stuff. There was an age related decline.
Yeah, I think he's just getting old.
So it's going to be interesting to see if the receiving changes that they made can sort of pick up the slack if he continues to decline in production. It's just it's a fascinating time. Like, we were having the conversation before the show just about how the fortunes of your team so much depend on the quarterback. And the reason, like we said, people don't talk about the Chiefs that much because you just kind of assume Mahomes is going to be great again. But there aren't that many great quarterbacks in the league anymore. And it's like, if you don't have a great quarterback, it's not like the old days where your defense could really get you to the Super Bowl anymore. It's like, you have to have a great quarterback. And I feel like that relates also to the rookies starting to play right away. It's like, if you don't have someone supremely talented under center, then you're really resigned to the fact that you have no chance in that season. So putting like a Caleb Williams under center right away, for example, I think in the Bears front office's minds, it legitimately gives them the best opportunity to try and catch lightning in a bottle and do something right away. Because it's just not like what it was. Like, if you could have a great defense, that's probably not enough. And there just aren't that many great quarterbacks in the NFL anymore. And it's been a talking point for a while, but just going through the research today, it underscored it again for me.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what Caleb Williams he's got a very unique vibe about him. Like, he's unapologetically himself. And whether you love that or hate that, that's kind of like what we're going to see from kids being born in 2001. Like, this is not
very
your
rattling.
Tom Brady's, like,
very
weird.
Rattling.
There's just, like, it's a different vibe of kids coming out of NCAA schools and playing college sports and making NIL money. Like, everyone is just going to be different. And he's got a certain, like, energy around him. It's going to be very interesting to see how he deals with the highs and lows of being a first overall pick and the expectations in a market like Chicago is going to be all
tough.
Over this guy,
it's
right?
Tough.
So it's going to be important that he's got a good head on his shoulders. I think that's the main story that everyone is talking about is what to expect from the rookies. And I mean, that's kind of how it is every offseason. So
I asked the Bills question. So I want to get your opinion.
Yeah.
How are you feeling?
You know, like I feel obviously like I love the Bills and I want them to be successful, but I think that it's a lot on Josh Allen's shoulders. They made some big different. They've got some different guys on their roster as they do every year. They've got some injuries already in preseason. So I don't know how I feel. I think that this AFC East is tough.
It's wide open.
I don't know how I feel about Rodgers with the Jets. I'm just going to play that one out. Maybe two snaps in, we find out. But the Dolphins, as we said, came off that big season last year. Their offense was running. So
much talent.
I don't feel like they're the hands-down favorites to win that as they've always been. But Josh Allen can do some spectacular things. And sometimes you just have to hope on a wish and a prayer that Josh Allen gets you through it all. But, you know, Amy even mentioned, like, you're one injury away. And it always feels like they're one major injury away from something happening. So just gonna take it simple and slow here, okay?
Yeah, that's always the worry when you watch Josh Allen and you watch the Bills.
Well, like, he plays a style that you're like, whoa, my gosh, Josh.
Like, yeah, we know you're like 6'5", 240 or 250 or whatever it is, and we know you can be physical, but you're too important to the team.
Yeah.
So it's this weird sort of dichotomy. Like, he has to play that way in order to be as effective as he is.
And that's the way that you'd want him to play.
Right,
like, you're not going to be out. Don't do something that isn't yourself.
No, but you're opening yourself up definitely to, you know, injury. And you know, if he were, you know, knock on wood, to ever go down, then the Bills' chances would be,
he's our guy. All right, so we'll have lots more time to tee up at least week one coming up around the corner. Travis Kelce's going to be in the newest Happy Gilmore, too. See, that's what I'm saying. Like, who has had more than him? Him and his brother.
That's what I'm saying.
His brother is going to be a lead on, I forget which one of it is. I think it's Monday Night Football he's going to be on. Obviously, Travis is dating Taylor Swift. He won a Super Bowl, many of them. And now he's going to be in Happy Gilmore. I think they sold their podcast for like $1 billion. Like, they're just, they're doing great. And so this is another thing, being in Happy Gilmore too, which I don't know how people feel about like sequels to movies. I loved Happy Gilmore. Happy Gilmore is a dynamite movie. It's risky to say we're going to make a Happy Gilmore 2 because you don't want to mess with greatness. And that's just an all-timer.
It feels like we're really in a sequel phase right now. I don't even know. Obviously, Marvel's been recycled a million times. Like, I saw Deadpool and Wolverine last week. It was excellent. But it's besides the point. It's like, let's get some creative original content going.
I mean, I'm going to go see Happy Gilmore 2.
Of course you are. But that's the problem. They're all like,
it sucks,
it's easy money.
I'm going to be devastated that they went through the endeavor of like trying to make it I don't know if it can be better.
It won't make the first one any worse.
It can be
though.
Good, but the first one is just
iconic.
So yeah, and Travis Kelce going to be in the newest one. So just living a charmed life. Okay. We have about two more minutes here before we send you to the Blue Jays tonight. I'm going with the Jays tonight on the money line. That's my best bet.
You did it last night too?
Yeah.
Let's go.
And did it not work? How many bets have you won this week? Exactly.
Yeah, it'll be zero.
Yeah. So, you know, actually, I've been red hot. My first one, I had the Jays Vlad home run with, Ellie De La Cruz hasn't really done too much, but, you know, now I just said that he's probably going to get two home runs.
You got a little groovy on Monday.
But obviously, the Blue Jays with a big win last night, 10-3 over the Reds. They're looking to win this series. I mean, the Jays don't have really anything to play for. We talked about this, and I just think that. Good vibes, you know? They got a big win last night. Can they do it again? You got Yariel Rodriguez on the mound, who has been pretty fine for the Blue Jays. He's also kind of fighting for a rotation spot. So I would pick the Blue Jays on the money line when it's a coin flip like that. And I'm a homer, so.
I absolutely love it. I'm going kind of a coin flip again because I've been struggling, but I want to go and grab a good team at decent value. So I went with the Philadelphia Phillies against the Braves.
Well, these are my other favorite team.
Aaron Nola.
It just seemed like
pitching.
A good time.
Nola's been great all season. I know he's going up against Max Fried, but nonetheless, I think the Phillies, they're on a 4-game road losing streak. Good teams like that, you don't see streaks extend really past that point very often. So I'm banking on the Phillies to pull it together a little bit here with one of their best pitchers on the hill. So give me the Phillies at a pretty good number, -115.
Okay, so I saw today the Blue Jays pushed back their rotation a day. So right now there's nobody pitching on Thursday.
Yeah.
It could be a surprise starter. It was supposed to be Chris Bassitt. Do you think his comments got him moved back? Got him benched?
Or speculate. Cue the headlines. Cue the aggregators.
Imagine. Don't clip that. It was a joke. Yeah, it was just joking. But so now this series against the Angels, we'll have a TBD tomorrow night. I mean, this is a nice schedule for them. The Reds, the Angels, the Cubs, like it's just like, and then they got the Red Sox.
I do wonder how much is just like kind of pressures off their shoulders now. They know they're not going to make a run. Mm. I know I asked Buck this, it was last week.
What did he say?
And he's like, they're always kind of relaxed because they understand that the ups and downs and the grind of 162 game regular season. But I do think that, you know, Vladdy kind of knows that he's not playing for a free agent contract number. Really, but the team is not playing for a playoff spot, so it sort of eliminates one stressor for him. And guys like George Springer kind of have a load off their shoulders, knowing that it's not the most competitive season anymore. So kind of go out and just play and have some fun, enjoy the company of the younger players who are trying
to
make a name
tonight
for themselves.
Enjoy tonight is City Connect night.
Yeah, just enjoy yourself playing baseball. Get back to why you got into it in the first place. Go have some fun, and it seems like it's working for the Jays right now.
Yeah,
so.
You sound like a good coach. Just get out there and have some fun.
Have some fun.
Play
have
hard.
Some fun. I think you're seeing it. Like last night, 5 home runs. That's
fun. I mean, it's pretty hard to not have fun when you win 10-3 and you get 5 home runs and 2 back-to-back ones. You got a position player pitching against you. If you're not having fun, then you shouldn't be playing baseball.
Yeah, but let's see them turn Vladdy's hot streak into some more wins here, because they've kind of just been, in terms of record, kind of the same spot, 8-9 games below 500. When you have Vladdy clicking like this, it'd be nice to see them string together a bit of a winning streak here, because they should be doing that when he's in the middle of the order, bopping like he is.
All right, so Jays connect jerseys tonight. I like them. You like those?
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
they're pretty cool.
Yeah.
They're 4-6 in those jerseys, so they turn that around tonight.
Yeah.
They won.
Not a great number for
they
your
won
money
the last
line,
two. They wore in those jerseys, so.
Yeah. Probably
that's
another Vladdy homer tonight, too.
Just like our streak of Chris's. We need a Chris for tomorrow.
I
maybe Chris Cuthbert.
List.
Cece, you listening?
Ooh.
We're going to send you a message after this.
Good one.
Christine Simpson?
Yeah, beyond those two.
I can't think of any other Chris's.
Yeah, now it's thin.
Chris Pratt, is he around? Chris Hemsworth? All right, we'll be back tomorrow on Baby Friday. Have a great night, everyone.